Ya.
Translation, this material world, when the conditioned soul cannot arrange for his own maintenance despite exploiting others, he tries to exploit his own father or son, taking away the relative's possessions, although they may be very insignificant. If he cannot acquire things from his father, sons, or relatives, he prepared to give them all kinds of trouble. Rinpo Wansky actually saw a distressed man steal ornaments from his daughter just to maintain himself. As the English proverb goes, necessity knows no law. When a conditioned soul needs something, forgets his relationship with relatives and exploits his own father or son. We also receive information from Srimad Bhagavatam that in this age of Kali, the time is quickly approaching when a relative will kill another relative for a small farthing. Without Krishna consciousness, people will deteriorate further and further in their hellish condition where they will perform abominable acts. Text 15, in this world, family life is exactly like a blazing fire in the forest. There is not the least happiness, and gradually one becomes more and more implicated in unhappiness. In household life, there is nothing favorable for perpetual happiness. Being implicated in home life, the conditioned soul is burned by the fire of lamentation. Sometimes he condemns himself as being very unfortunate, and sometimes he claims that he suffers because he performed no pious activities in his previous life. Purport, Gurbhastakan Srila Vishnu Chakravarti Thakura Sang Samsar Dava Nala Lita Loka Sarnaya Karunam Ganatvam. Life in this material world is exactly like a blazing forest fire. No one goes to set fire in the forest if the fire takes place. Similarly, everyone wants to be happy in the material world, but the material conditions of material life simply increase. Sometimes the person caught in the blazing fire of material existence condemns himself that due to his bodily conception he cannot get out of the entanglement, and thus he suffers more and more. Text 16, government are always like carnivorous demons, called rakshasas, and sometimes these government men turn against the conditioned soul and take away all his accumulated wealth. Being bereft of his life's reserved wealth, the conditioned soul loses all enthusiasm. Indeed, it is as though he loses his life. Wherefore, the word Rajakul or Rakshasa is very significant. Srimad Bhagavatam was compiled about 5,000 years ago. Yet government men are referred to as Rakshasas, or carnivorous demons. If government men are opposed to a person, that person will be bereft of all his riches, which he has accumulated with great care over a long period of time. Actually, no one wants to pay income taxes. Even government men themselves try to avoid these taxes. But at unfavorable times, income taxes are exacted forcibly, and taxpayers become very morose. Next 70, sometimes the conditioned soul imagines his father or grandfather has again come in the form of his son or grandson. In this way he feels the happiness. One sometimes feels in a dream in the conditioned soul, sometimes takes pleasure in such mental concoctions. Wherefore, due to ignorance of the real existence of the Lord, the conditioned soul imagines many things. Influenced by fruit of activity, comes together with relatives, fathers, sons, and grandfathers, exactly as straws gathered together in a moving stream. In a moment, the straws are thrown everywhere and they lose contact. In conditional life, the living entity is temporary with many other conditioned souls that gather together as family members. The material affection is so strong that even after the father or grandfather passes away, one takes pleasure in thinking that they return to the family in different forms. Sometimes this may happen, but in any case, the conditioned soul likes to take pleasure in such concocted thoughts. So, the previous verse I've spoken of, the cheating caused by taking shelter of false gurus or spiritual people in order to get relief from the material world. But ultimately, one doesn't get relief, and instead one suffers more because one doesn't get any happiness from this. Ultimately, even when they get some temporary material happiness, in the long run, one simply suffers. So, after that, here we have further descriptions of various miseries that take place in the material world. Due to want, one has to take from one's own relatives, or father, or son, or something, steal whatever, and sometimes even kill them in order to get one's possessions. This is a common occurrence in the material world. And of course it becomes more and more prevalent as time goes on. And then the next verse speaks about the blazing fire of family life. Family life actually is simply a trap in which one suffers and one can in no way get relief because one can't put that fire out. Somehow it is there and he simply has to endure that suffering. This is, of course, in reference to the fact that most people end up getting married. Let's say probably 95% of the adult population gets married. So then all of the troubles ensue after that. We see that the man originally went to the forest in order to get wealth, presumably to support his family members, etc. And then we see that the various afflictions in the forest, such as mosquitoes biting or the animals biting, refer to his relatives and family members giving trouble because they demand so many things from the person, so therefore he has to keep earning money, etc. So the totality of all those things is here compared to a forest fire. And the nature of the forest fire is that it's very difficult to escape from it. An example we have is the animals that get caught in the forest fire and they burn up. So similarly, the household life is taken as a fire, and ultimately a person gets trapped in that situation of family life and he never gets out. Of course, we see in the Varnashram system, technically a person of the upper caste should take vanaprastha, and if he's a Brahmin, he should take sannyas. That's a recommendation, in which sense he does get out of family life. Huh? If that step is not taken, then the situation is literally very hellish, because the person up to the time of his death is caught in this type of position. However, even if we do have this system of Varnashram and whatever, still we have to admit that a person, as long as he's in household life, is distracted from his real purpose, and he's liable to forget the spiritual goal of life. So whether it is Varnashram or non-Varnashram, to some extent family life is always a big problem for the jiva in respect to spiritual life. Here it doesn't specify whether he's in or outside the Varnashram system. It just simply condemns the family life in general as being abominable. So this is in contrast to other portions of the Bhagavatam would actually praise the Varnashram system, which is largely a Grihastha system. In other words, the backbone of the Varnashram system is the Grihastha ashram, because, as I said, 95% of the people there are Grihasthas, so there's a small portion of Brahmacharis and Sannyasis and Vanaprasthas. But basically, the whole system survives on the Grihasthas, who support the Brahmacharis, Vanaprasthas, and Sannyasis. So the whole system depends on householders, actually. So if we condemn the whole system, that means we throw out the Varnashram system also. And we have only renounced Babaji's or something like that. This condemnation of family life in general is a very strong negative criticism of all material life, whether it is Varnashram or non-Varnashram, whatever. However, we do see that the kings in general support a Varnashram system. That is their duty. And that is, of course, the system created by the Supreme Lord to put the Manus in place, and they produce the kings, dynasties of kings, who institute Dharma, or Varnashram system, which means family life. So there is a practical recognition of the fact that no matter how strongly we condemn the whole family life, naturally people will indulge in family life. So therefore, the compromise is made in terms of a Varnashram system, so at least within that idea of family life, there can be hope of some redemption by eventually becoming a Vanaprastha or Sannyasi. Of course, even there we have to admit that majority of the population even doesn't go that far technically, because in that system the majority of people are Sudras, and Sudras don't take Vanaprastha or Sannyas. So that, let's say over half the population at least is Sudra. So that portion never ends up in the higher sections at all. So their only ashram is Grihastha ashram, only one ashram. So in the Varnashram system itself, most of the population is dedicated to Grihastha life, and at that Sudra Grihastha life. So, and of course, in the Sudra Grihastha life, there is also minimum of rules compared to the higher caste, so it's a little less strict. So therefore, the license for sense gratification is more in the bottom rungs. So therefore, in that sense, here the condemnation of family life is somewhat justified, because even in the Varnashram system, the majority of the people are more or less enjoyers of the system. Anyway, that system has a goal of gradually purifying people through the household ashram as they go upwards to Rajagun and Sattvagun, so that they reach a position of sense control and ultimately renouncing the material world. That was the whole goal of the system. But the danger is always there. Since the majority is Sudra and householders in that system, the danger is always there that the system reverts back to enjoyment because of that. Therefore, it needs a very strong king with spiritual motivations and perceptions. Otherwise, it's likely to collapse and end up as a Sudra enjoyment system also, since the Sudras dominate anyway. So the system has to be strongly enforced by a very, very spiritual king. So that is why the Supreme Lord puts the Manus in charge. They are actually empowered by the Supreme Lord. They're called the Vibhutis of the Lord. So they have some special powers endowed by the mercy of the Lord in order to institute dharma to the people and pacify the people in general, give them enjoyment, and at the same time allow for gradual advancement so that they eventually can come to this position of understanding the hopelessness of the material world, etc., and then renounce it. So, in that system, the condemnation will only come with either the Vanaprastha or the Sannyas ashramas. And generally, only in the Kshatriya or the Brahminical classes. So in other words, a very small segment of society will ultimately get this realization of renunciation. So that, of course, is the last goal of the Varnashram system. After we get Artha, Dharma, and Kama, then we have Moksha. So a small segment of that population will aim for liberation from the material world. The majority will actually be engaging in household life, etc. So the hope of the Varnashram system is that people will come up to this stage of realizing this. So it was a good fortune of Rahugana that, though he was a king, he got this knowledge from Jagvara to renounce. He actually understood the futility of household life, etc., which puts him in a good position. Sometimes the king may become too attached to his material position. So this is very good instruction. We see in many cases that the kings follow properly. So therefore, kings like Priyavrata and Bharat, they renounced and they took Vanaprastha life after ruling for many, many years, because they had this understanding that ultimately the material world is useless, and they were ruling over the kingdom as a duty to the Supreme Lord. But ultimately, all material attachments and whatever are useless, so therefore they gave up Artha, Dharma, and Kama, though they instituted that in their kingdom, and they simply went for getting out of the material world. So that is the hope there, that the people of Vaishnava will come to that position. In the system of bhakti, however, one can directly condemn everything by understanding that artha, dharma, karma, and even moksha are insignificant. And one gets the same result of renouncing the material world. However, we do have the concept of yukta vairagya, or vairagya, or renunciation by engagement rather than by renunciation. So though this particular section emphasizes rejection of the material world and therefore emphasis on liberation, in the system of bhakti, the emphasis is not upon the liberation aspect, but rather upon engagement of everything in serving the Supreme Lord. So, therefore, we have the idea that it doesn't matter whether you are renounced or not renounced, whether you are householder or sannyasi or babaji or whatever. The main point is that one should engage everything in the service of the Lord. So the householder can do that. He's not renouncing everything, but he uses what he has for the service of the Lord. A sannyasi, of course, doesn't have much, but even then, whatever he has, he can engage in the service of the Lord. So the emphasis is not upon renunciation, but upon using everything one has for the service of the Lord. So therefore, the idea of varnas and ashrams disappears more or less as we emphasize bhakti more and more. It's not so important anymore. Because renunciation or detachment from everything in the material world is simply an automatic result of attachment to the Lord. And so the more we engage everything in the service of the Lord, automatically the more detached we are. So what is the use of renouncing anything? Because we're detached from everything, then the purpose is served. In the normal system where we have the ashramas of household life and vanaprastha sannyas, the idea is by renouncing things and becoming separated from things, eventually become detached from them. So, in bhakti, the idea is not to renounce the things and become detached from them, but use them for Krishna, not for yourself, and that way become detached from them. So, a little bit different in this concept. So therefore, we'll see that, as far as bhakti is concerned, the ashramas then have lesser significance. Not so significant, and instead we simply emphasize serving the Supreme Lord, and vairagya becomes a natural concomitant of bhakti itself rather than a goal of one's life. In the sense of vanaprastha sannyas having this as their goal in bhakti, it is simply a symptom that appears along with engagement in service of the Lord. So, of course, Jadvara is a great devotee, and he realizes this. So therefore, at the very beginning, actually, the whole thing is accomplished by serving the lotus feet of the Supreme Lord and the devotees. That was his final conclusion. But we'll find in these middle sections a great emphasis upon the renunciation aspect of everything, and painting a very dark picture of the problems of the material world in order to produce a sense of disgust and an urge to renounce it all. Try to renounce, and that, see, renunciation can be favorable to bhakti. It's not necessarily unfavorable. So, therefore, we do have in Krishna's saying that abhyasena dukontaya vairagyena chakrahyate. So, vairagya, he mentions there that we control the senses by vairagya and practice. So, therefore, to a certain sense, yes, we, even in bhakti, we do have some sort of renunciation, therefore we have regulated principles. That's the sense of vairagya. A minimum sense we have. But it is not to the extent that we'll find in the, when one takes vanaprastha, one has to wear bark clothes and eat roots and fruits in the forest uncooked and things like that and lie on the floor. So that is real renunciation of the household. And then take sannyas, and you no longer see the wife or the children, and you wander around, look, and whatever comes in the forest, you eat that, but otherwise you don't eat. So a very, very, that's a very severe type of renunciation. If you look in the Bhagavatam, you'll see the rules, and even very difficult for anyone in the modern day to even follow a vanaprastha life. It is very, very difficult. What to speak of the sannyas life. So, yes, there is some restrictions in bhakti itself, but the emphasis is always upon engagement in the service of the Lord. So we, whatever is favorable for devotional advancement, if it is a sense of renunciation, fine. But then the warning is given by Rupa Goswami there in the Nectar Devotion itself, where he says, Vairagya is not an anga of bhakti. So therefore, practicing renunciation in itself can be even unfavorable to bhakti. So therefore he says, it can dry up the heart. Shushka, which means dried up. Which means that by practicing renunciation, one becomes proud of that position of detachment. So that is a contrary feeling to the nature of bhava, which melts the heart and develops attraction for Krishna. So therefore, by practicing renunciation, we tend to go towards liberation. And by doing that, our attraction to the Lord decreases because we're trying to get liberated from the material world, more or less, and become very peaceful. So that will discourage or impede our development of our relationship of affection with the Lord. So therefore, it's considered not so favorable. So in Rupa Goswami says, in the beginning, it's slightly favorable. Vairagya is slightly favorable. But in the end, finally, when one gets to bhava and prema, where in bhava, of course, the idea is, one of the symptoms is liberation is regarded as insignificant. Moksha, lubhuta, kriti, becomes useless. So vairagya, liberation, and all this are not considered factors at all because of the taste for the attraction to the Supreme Lord and down on those stages, so they become insignificant there. But we will see that automatically that vairagya manifests, not as having a taste for vairagya, but simply for having a taste for Krishna. So therefore we see the Gosangas and Vrindavan are absorbed in Krishna, consequently they didn't care about the material bodies. They were completely renounced as far as clothing and food and shelter, etc. But they were not trying to renounce things. They were simply absorbed in Krishna, so they didn't care for their body's life. That's all. Early child marriage is a later custom that arose when the Muslims invaded or something like that. That's what I've heard. It's not a Vedic custom. So we rarely hear of people getting married when they're children in the stories of Mahabharata, etc. They don't do that. That is some sort of later custom that came in probably a few hundred years ago. They wanted to marry the children early because they're afraid of the Muslims, whatever like that, stealing their children or whatever. So therefore, in the original system, we wouldn't have brahmacharis who are married. It's impossible. So actually they get married after their brahmachari education is finished. Now what has happened is that as time went on, many people didn't go to the Gurukul, especially the Vaishyas and Kshatriyas. And maybe only some of the Brahmins went to the Gurukul. So therefore,
what to do, because technically you have to go through the samskaras of being a brahmachari in order to become a grihastha. The system is there that first you become a samskar, etc. So therefore they have a type of brahmachari, the one-day brahmachari. When you get married, first you become a brahmachari, you're a samskar for that, then the next day you're a samskar for the marriage, whatever. So that's the one type of brahmachari. There's four types of brahmachari. One is the one-day brahmachari, the one-week brahmachari, the one-year brahmachari, and then of course the full-length brahmachari, and then the whole-life brahmachari, you know, all types of brahmachari. So it accommodates all types of people in the system. But generally now in the modern age, there is no brahmachari places, really. Very, very few. You'll see a few in South India, maybe that's about it. Not much. So basically the ashram is gone, and they just have the one-day brahmachari system or two-hour brahmachari system. In the Bhagavad Gita, the Lord mentions chatur varna manasya, which means varna ashram should be classified in terms of qualifications, not by birth. How to understand this qualification? Cannot come only by training as a jiva has previous karma. Well, yeah. It doesn't say one or the other, it says both. Guna and karma are there, and it doesn't mean that janma is automatically disqualified from the thing, but we have to look at the qualities which the person manifests and his activities that he does as he grows up. But now this of course will be influence sometimes you know, to a large degree by birth as well, since hereditary factors are there. And that is recognized, and therefore they have the emphasis upon janma or birth in the varna ashram system. So it's not not completely discarded, but if one only looks at birth without the qualities and activities, then you end up with a ridiculous system like King Vena, who was not qualified as a king at all, but he became the king because he came from a king's family, and they put him as a king, and then they had to kill him. Brahmins had to kill him ultimately because he was so bad. So therefore one can use the birth as a convenience, but over and above that one has to see the qualities and activities of the person, and then one can see their train them accordingly, or after they're trained, look at the qualities again and see where they belong and what type of occupation they should engage in. So it's not exclusively one or the other, birth or qualities and karma, but a combination of both. And therefore, in previous ages, the janma system worked to a large degree, though we say there were exceptions in the case of Vena and others. At large, you worked. In Kali Yuga, the janma is even less important because lack of samskars and lack of proper education. So therefore, most of those born in a particular varna by birth don't have those qualities. They may have other completely different qualities because of lack of samskars and lack of training. Complete lack of training. So therefore, you have to look at the qualities and the activities more in Kali Yuga.
Harald, you mentioned that mostly the population will be Shudras, and they will also have only one ashram to go. And in that case, the jiva which enters the Shudra body, how it progresses, will be so degrading in the society, and when it further degrades rather than progress gradually in the varnashram system. But how it happens actually? How the jiva progresses in the varnashram system?
Well, even the sutra has rules to follow. So we'll see in the Bhagavad, in the 7th canto, 11th canto, there's rules for sutras. They don't get any money, so they can't. That's a limitation on the sense gratification right there. So, of course, they have to get the shelter of the higher castes, and they're protected by them, they're fed by them, etc. And they have principles to follow, like mercy and so many other qualities. They have to follow those principles also. And they have marriage, and there's that is a, that itself is a restriction. They have to have marriage, and they have a duty to raise their families also. Like that. So there is some restrictions there, but it is much less than the restrictions on the higher castes, strictly the Brahmins, we'll see. So many rules are there. Why less rules? Because they're incapable of following them anyway. So they got easier rules to follow. Nevertheless, the rules are there. If they follow properly, then they get rewarded. And gradually, they begin to control the senses more and more and more, and then they get out of the tamaguna and go to rajaguna.
So they will go to that body and then take the higher.
Eventually, yeah, yeah. They act as an ideal sudra, and which means they control the senses a lot. Then they go upwards. And they gradually progress into gunas by controlling the senses more and more.
So in Varnashram system, it is a gradual day. One has to, you know, sudra, then you become Vaishnava.
Yeah, in most cases, yeah. Gradual elevation over many, many births.
And in bhakti, even though whatever it may be, they will take to the
bhakti. Of course, yes. Sudden.
The father and grandmother
take both the same family as such and that's
it. It can take place, the prophet said.
Yeah. Well, yeah, so it's just, it can happen that they do take birth again, but it's not that common. Out of great attachment, they may come back or for a certain purpose. Nevertheless, the idea here is that they'll imagine it anyway, that they're taking birth because of attachment to those persons. So that's, of course, not true, but they imagine it because of the great attachment they have for their grandfather, father, whatever. Yeah. Well, in one sense, there's a positive aspect to all of this genealogy in the Vedic system. When you meet a person, then you have to introduce yourself by reciting your genealogy, who you are. And if you don't have one, that means you're a nobody. No one should speak to you because you're a nobody. You don't have any family. So technically, you should have some ancestry that goes back, you know, like that. So all that is there to remember the ancestors or whatever. So, just as we see the kings trace their lines, every family has their own line of history and whatever. So that creates a sort of tradition for them. If they don't have any tradition, then of course you lose your customs, you lose everything. So that sense of tradition helps them maintain their rules and regulations, etc.
All the devotees,
yeah, well, of course, as I said, this is the Varnashram system. That's one system of rules and regulations to maintain the family, maintain laws of dharma, etc. If we come to bhakti, of course, the laws of bhakti or the rules of bhakti are higher. So therefore, these rules can be discarded if they are not favorable to the development of bhakti.
So generally, who has to decide now? Is this favorable or not? The person has to decide or he has to consider?
Well, some things are natural, because if it's worship of David, there's those traditions, then we reject those things. Mm-hmm. They're contrary to our philosophy. Those things should be rejected, definitely. Other things may or may not be, depending on the situation. Without knowledge. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, that's how they progress. They just simply follow the rules. And eventually, it's a slow process. Because their sudra means tamagun, ignorance. Ignorance means can't understand anything, no knowledge. So how do you educate someone that is ignorant? You can't. Some people, you put them in school, they don't learn anything. So what do you do to them? You can't do anything with them. So you can't give them that knowledge, because it won't be useful to them anyway. What you can do is simply make them obedient to follow rules and certain rules and regulations. That much you can do as a human being. Follow those rules and regulations, fine. That's his punya. So he gets good birth next lifetime, next lifetime, next lifetime, and gradually advances. And then he comes out of tamaguna. Once he comes out of tamaguna, he's given more responsibility. therefore he gets his money as a Vaishya, he can spend his money, whatever. But then again, rules and regulations are, the king will grab it and take the taxes off you and just control you. And then there's certain rules you have to follow. So he has more responsibility as he goes through Rajagun and Sattvagun. More freedom, but more responsibility also.
Whenever it's really undermining the government can always take communist when you start with that. Not all may be really undermining the taxation. Government will always.
Yeah, well, when it's exploitative. It's exploitative and you earn and then the government takes it all away. So that is when the king is a dharmic, then they will tend to take too much. In other words, the population produces the crops and the king takes it all away and they have starved to death. So that's basically what happens sometimes in some societies. That's, we can say, like the slave society in which nobody owns anything, the king owns everything. And then they make the crops and he takes it all away and they don't have anything to eat and the king enjoys. And then when there's a famine in the land, then of course the king has all the stores of the grain and he survives and they all starve. So then he doesn't distribute it to the others. So that is the wrong method. But it often happens that the kings act that way if they don't act according to Dharma.
Karantara Sushumat Bhagavan ki
Jai.
Kutanat Bhagavan ki
Jai.
Vengi Vidi Kutanat Bhagavan ki
Jai.
I hope so.
¿Qué es lo que